Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Mike Sando of The Athletic will join us. We will go over all things NFL, hot stories, Patriots and Bears. Are they for real? He is an awards voter, Mike is, so we get his thoughts on his process, maybe who he's leaning towards, and some other things. I've known Mike for years, so I know that his process, he usually doesn't start. I think always doesn't start till basically the season ends or is winding down, and then he jumps into it and he really takes it seriously. So I'm not sure how much we're going to get out of Mike, but we'll see if we can pull any gems and try to read between the lines and get the mindset of a voter here. I'll get to the college football playoff in a minute. I will start, though, just a couple things. NFL, the game on Monday night was unwatchable. Giants are just, boy, what a dysfunctional mess. You listen to the comments Tuesday, if people saw this, of Joe Shane, the GM, being grilled, I think, by Pat Leonard of the Daily News, who we've had on this podcast in past years under previous iterations of this podcast, who does a good job. And he just kept grilling Shane, saying, coaches are getting fired, defensive coordinator, Dable, Bowen, basically, where's the accountability with you? And Shane just kept talking in circles saying, we got to do better. I am accountable. It's not good enough, but not giving really a straight answer. And just seems like an absolute mess. And it doesn't seem to matter who the Giants, they've changed. They had a million coaches over the last decade or so, ever since Coughlin got fired. They cycle in these coaches in and out. They cycle in and out these GMs. It's almost like the Jets, where you start to wonder if it's the top down. You start to wonder if it's the owner. I think that's probably a good indication the Giants are just a mess right now. But they do have Dart, Neighbors, Scadabo. If Carter seems like he needs to get his head on straight, he got benched for the first couple drives of the first quarter on Monday night. That's not a bad nucleus where if you could squint, you could see the makings of a good team. But the Giants were just not competitive on Monday night. Dart did not do anything to cement his status as Rookie of the Year. Chance on a primetime game to do so. And threw a touchdown, had another touchdown I thought could have been caught by Theo Johnson. That was the play before, the just embarrassing, and sums up the Giants well, the embarrassing miss kicked by Koo. That would have been two touchdowns. His stats would look better, but just did nothing from there on out. And the Giants lose and Patriots win comfortably. I still don't totally buy the Patriots. I know it's probably not fair. And there, you got a good shot here to be the one seed. But as far as like holding up the trophy, could they be in an AFC title game? Yeah, I guess if you're in an AFC title game and it's at home, you could be in the Super Bowl. But holding up the trophy, I just still have a hard time seeing it. It just feels like a little bit better version of Washington last year, where it's the schedule, things are breaking right. Yeah, they got the coach right. Yeah, they have the quarterback right. Yeah, they're going in the right direction. I know they won in Buffalo. They won in Tampa. But it seems like every week they're playing the Jets or, they lost to the Raiders. They could have lost to the Dolphins. It's been such a soft schedule. It's hard to really gauge it. But, hey, playoff team, one seed. You don't apologize. You don't give the wins back. So Patriots in good shape here to win a division and have a pretty nice scenario here in terms of the seeding. Dart drops to plus 229. He drops. He was right around there. So not too much movement. Dart plus 220 now. Rookie of the Year, McMillan, the short shot, plus 115. Egbuka, the Tampa receiver, plus 300. Then Warren slightly behind that at plus 550. Henderson, the Pats running back, creeping up at 14-1. So pretty wide open race. I wouldn't count Dart out. I don't know that I'd bet Dart at plus 220. But, you get the idea. Dart, I think if he played well, they're going to have to win a couple games here and there, but Dart could still win the award. Thursday night, huge game, fun game, two good offenses, two teams. Really, let's say going in different directions, but the Lions we thought of as like a Super Bowl contender not that long ago, and the Cowboys we thought of as an afterthought of, bottom of the league kind of team, bottom five team, but probably a bottom 10 team, bottom third of the league. Now they kind of meet in the middle where the winner is going to have a chance here to maybe run the table and go to the playoffs, where the loser is in big trouble with the NFC, where 11 might not be good enough to get you in. A huge game, a fun game. Lions are at home. Lions are laying 3, total 54.5. No rest advantage here because the Lions and Cowboys always play on Thanksgiving, so they're both used to this scenario here, and just a fun game. I would take the 3 with Dallas. I think, same reason as last week, I think they're underrated defensively just because their season-long stats are so bad, but that defense they have now is not the defense they've had all season, and that's an elite offense. And yeah, who knows? Campbell might go for two. Let's just say somebody's Campbell's down 7 late, goes for 2. You avoid overtime, that kind of thing, and somebody wins by 1. Backdoor cover with that kind of offense. No St. Brown, it looks like, for the Lions, who hasn't practiced. I thought about going over, then I thought about going under because the Cowboys defense is underrated and the Lions, maybe with no St. Brown, run the ball more. God knows they stuck to that run till the bitter end last week against Green Bay. But what was last week against Green Bay? 31-24. I mean, that would put this over. I could see that being that kind of game. So if I had to bet it, I'd probably still take over just because I know Dallas has actually kind of morphed into an under team the last 3 or 4 weeks. The last 4 games have gone under. But to me, the best play is taking the 3 here with Dallas. I want to say toss-up game, but I don't know that these teams are that far apart right now with how improved Dallas is defensively. If Dallas got in the NFC, boy, with that offense and improved defense, you know, Schottenheimer, everyone killed the hire as a coach. He's not a terrible coach. He's really not. I like this Cowboys team. We'll see if they get in. It'd be fun if they get in. And, you know, this is a game where the winner, it's almost like a little playing game where the winner has got a chance to put themselves in the mix. The loser is going to be in big, big trouble, which, you know, hard to believe this Lions team not making the playoffs with one seed last year, up 17 in the NFC title game, second half 2 years ago. To miss the playoffs there would be a big time failure. College football playoffs, before we get to Mike. The final ranking, I know I don't talk about the rankings until the end, and this is it. This is the last one until we get the playoff revealed Sunday after all the championship games this weekend. It's a fun weekend. You get a few games Friday night, a little wet your beak, then the games on Saturday. That's not all the games on Saturday mean a lot, obviously, but I would put it this way. I think they're looking for a way to get Miami, and it's just the sense I get. It's obviously no inside information. I talked about with Jeff Parles on Monday. I said, do you see a path for Miami? And I asked, does Miami have any shot? And he goes, I don't see the path. And I said, neither do I. But just, I was talking to him a little while ago, and you know, he made the point, and I think it's a good one. Do they really want to leave the ACC out? If Texas Tech beats BYU and Duke beats Virginia, and then let's just say Georgia beats Bama and maybe beats them pretty comfortably, do they really want to leave the ACC out and just have them not have a participant? And do they want to discourage teams like Miami scheduled Notre Dame week one? Do they want to discourage teams from scheduling big-time opponents in week one? I know it's Bama. I know it'd be a hard scenario to hold a third loss against them, especially in a title game. But the fact that, hey, you're 2 losses, you'd be in right now, but you got to play a title game. We're going to use that against you. I don't know if they want to set that precedent. But Bama's plus 790 to miss. Miami is now down to plus 650 to make. That was a couple dollars higher just a day or two ago. I wonder if it'll continue to come down. I don't mind either of those bets. I have no idea what's going to happen. Nobody does, but I still have a hard time seeing them put him in over Notre Dame. I know Chris the Bear Fleek, our buddy, thinks as long as BYU loses, Notre Dame, that Miami's going to be in. If BYU loses, he thinks Miami's in. He thinks they'll put him in over Notre Dame. I think it's more likely they'd put him in over Bama if they lost. But that is the drama. That is the excitement here, the juice for this weekend. Will they find a way to put Miami in? I don't know. I don't know that it's a coin flip, but I think at plus 650, it's probably worth a bet. But other than that, you know, Ohio State, Indiana, it's a fun game. I don't know what it means. Both teams probably going to have a bye no matter what. It obviously has Heisman implications. Pavia has gotten steamed a lot there got steamed a lot on Wednesday. He's down to like plus 150. Basically looking at a three-way race. Mendoza, Sane, and Pavia, a three-man race, a legitimate three-man race. And I can't remember the last time we went into that Heisman Saturday. And if Mendoza wins, we'll know it'll be a runaway. Mendoza's going to win. If Indiana wins the game on Saturday, Mendoza, the Indiana quarterback, will win the award. I can't remember the last time we went into a Heisman Saturday, the voting, not really knowing. Usually it's a pretty much a foregone conclusion. I guess last year it was closer than people thought, but everyone kind of assumed Hunter. Hunter was like a zillion favorite, so the market didn't really think it was close. If Ohio State wins, you're going to go into this Saturday. I would think that would probably eliminate Mendoza unless he played really well. They lose a 41-38 type of game. You could still give it to him. But there's a scenario where you go into that Saturday Heisman, 10 days from now or so, without really knowing, with a legitimate like three-man race, which has not been the case in a while. So that would be fun. I don't know that there's any value there. I don't. I think it's so close. You're not getting a huge plus price on anyone. If you were able to grab Pavia at the plus 350 or so, I mean, I guess that's just because you're getting ahead of the number. I guess there's some value there. And there's some thought process that the West Coast vote, because he used to play out West, that he could get that vote. The Big Ten, the Midwest vote will cancel each other out with Sain and Mendoza, and then maybe Pavia can get the South vote. I'm not sure, but it's interesting. It should be a lot of fun to see what they do with the playoffs, see what they do with the Heisman. Not a ton still up in the air. I think we've got a lot solidified, but we know whatever happens, there's going to be somebody unhappy on Sunday. That's what's college football. I love the games. There's nothing better than the games. Saturday, noon to midnight, just sit there and watch all the games. But, boy, the structure of college football, whether it's Lane Kiffin leaving, having a committee decide. And the committee, it's an easy target because I don't care who you are. Sit down and make a 12-team playoff that's going to make everybody happy. It's impossible because there's just, you're splitting hairs with these teams. You can say, well, my wins are better. And the other team would say, well, my losses are better. My schedule was better. There's always, it's just never going to be apples to apples. So somebody's always going to have a gripe, and legitimate gripe. But the games are great. But outside of that, it's just such a circus with, you know, the coaching thing and the structure of it. So we'll see how it plays out. But Miami plus 650 to me is a bet to make. I don't mind Bama plus 790 to miss. I think that's an okay bet. And Dallas plus the 3 on Thursday. I'm excited for that one. Lions and Cowboys. But coming up next, Mike Sando, awards voter, Hall of Fame voter. We will get his thoughts on the week ahead, the stories in the NFL. That is next. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. Before I forget, rate, review, subscribe. I did post at Not The Willow the giveaway. So leave a review on Apple to be eligible. Let's talk to Mike. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch him at The Athletic. He does a great job with the Pick 6 column. He's a award voter, a Hall of Fame voter. Who knows? Maybe a Hall of Famer himself one day. It is our buddy Mike Sando. Mike, thanks for coming on, man. How are you?
It's good to be here. Thanks.
You're shaking your head no. Like you can.
You don't get in the Hall of Fame as a reporter. Sorry. Luckily, that's not happening. So.
All right.
But I do love doing Hall of Fame research and voting. It's great.
Yeah, we'll get to some of the voting stuff, but I want to start with what we saw Monday night and kind of tie it into what you wrote about in your Pick 6 column with the Bears. The Patriots, the Bears, on top of the NFL standings, on top of their divisions, it's hard to believe. On a scale of 1 to 10, you could take it from either team or both teams, how much of a believer are you in the Patriots and in the Bears?
Yeah, more so in the Patriots than the Bears, because I do think that Drake May is really playing at a super high level, and I think they've been a very good defensively against the run. I think they've been good. You know, I just feel like, you know, as surprising as it is, I feel like it's a little bit more fundamentals. Whereas you saw Ben Johnson talking about, hey, we're winning in spite of our passing game, you know. So Drake May has a real MVP quarterback profile right now, you know, and I think that Caleb Williams doesn't. They're not doing it the same way. I think if you look at, I think we are looking at maybe all the teams that have won 9 of their first 12 games, and they had one of the maybe the third smallest point margin, you know, on record. Like they're plus 6, so you know they're a good story in their own way, and who knows, they could improve over the course as we keep going. I'm excited for them, but I do feel like the Patriots are closer to kind of being there because they're getting really good play from their quarterback, and that's the most sustainable thing you have.
You mentioned MVP. You are a voter. I know you usually don't look at this until the end of the year, but can you just explain what your process is in terms of the awards and just kind of take it from there?
Well, in general, I concede that it's probably a quarterback award. You know, I think if somebody in a different position is having a historic season, then we look at it. But I don't think we're having that this year. You know, JSN we'll see for Seattle, but he had a bad stat game this last game. I don't think he's going to finish with 2,200 yards or something. So we'll focus on the quarterbacks. And then, you know, the things that I look at, I mean, number one, I think you do need to have some kind of a statistical profile that is somewhat in line with the other quarterbacks that have won it in the last 10 years. I look at that. It just passed the eye test, right? Just looking at the production. And then some of the other factors that I like to look at is, you know, how I think some team success is probably part of this too. Usually those will go hand in hand. I am impressed when somebody, you know, is overcoming. Maybe their defense isn't carrying them to win, you know. And so, like I thought Lamar Jackson last year, especially the first half of last year, was really carrying his team to win without a good defense. And they were winning a lot of high-scoring games. So I gave him a little bit extra points for that, you know. This year I've felt like it's kind of Stafford, but I think Drake May's production in some ways is better, so we'll see how it plays out, but I do think it's those two guys right now.
Yeah, I was just going to say, do you have any lean between the two? Do you buy this idea that Dak Prescott, if the Cowboys rallied and won the division, he could get back in the mix, or is it simply just a two-horse race?
No, I think he could. You know, I think he would be the classic example of the guy overcoming the bad defense to win. I think their defense has improved, and it will need to, you know, for him to get the wins. But, you know, they've got Detroit this week, and they just beat the two Super Bowl teams. So if they were to finish really strong, you know, I think that would be – I would definitely look at that.
And the two teams we were just talking about, Vrabel with the Patriots, Ben Johnson with the Bears – for Coach of the Year, is it, in your mind, who overachieves the most? What are some of the things you look at for Coach of the Year?
I think it has become in relation to expectations award. You know, I've done some of that research before, too, where, like, when Belichick was coaching, he had to, you know, win. I think he averaged 14 and a half wins to get Coach of the Year, right? So some of those guys, like, what would Andy Reid have to do to get it? He's obviously not getting it this year. But I think it's probably Vrabel. I do, because... you know, I think most people had them, and I'm talking people in the league, you know, kind of a bottom three team in the AFC for their roster talent. And so people liked Vrabel, thought he would come in, maybe help make him competitive. But, I mean, that's a great record with it just kind of pivoting. I know they spent in free agency, but I just, people didn't think they were going to be that good. So I think he would have to be the guy right now.
Last awards one before we get to some bigger picture.
Which, by the way, no one's going to say Kyle Shanahan, but I mean, that, you know, the more I think about it, like, I think Vrabel's going to get it probably, but, you know, when I do my own ballot, I'm going to look at some of these other coaching jobs. If Kyle Shanahan, they're 9-4, if Kyle Shanahan has a 12-5 season, I mean, that might get our attention.
Yeah, I wonder if he'd have to win the division in order to win it, but I agree that's an under-the-radar with all of their injuries to kind of piece it together with duct tape. I think he's an under-the-radar year. Last awards one before we get to some bigger picture stuff. With Rookie of the Year, I mean, sometimes the guys at the top, I know Schwesinger's in the mix for defensive. You know, Dart was in the mix for offensive. He had a bad game on Monday. His team's not winning any games. How much of a balance is it between team success, overall production? How do you take all that into account?
That's really interesting. For Rookie of the Year, I would probably just – I haven't researched it, so I think if it's a quarterback who's productive for a whole season, you know, and is pretty good, and you know, is having an outstanding season, I think that would probably get my attention the most. But I'm just trying to think this year. I haven't thought through that one yet. Sometimes it's obvious. Is it obvious? It's not really obvious this year, is it? You know, I think Warren's done a nice job for the Colts. You know, I have to look at his stats and all of that, but I think he's made a big impact on a winning team with a top five offense statistically. So, you know, that would be pretty good. But I need to look at that one.
Yeah, I mean, the main suspects here, Egbuka for Tampa, McMillan for the Panthers, Dart, and then just that's pretty much it. I don't know that
one. I mean, to me, Dart's been fine, but he's been in and out of the lineup. I mean, maybe it's Dart in the end, but let's see how he finishes.
Yep, absolutely. All right, let's go around the league here. The Eagles. Starting to feel a little bit like 2 years ago where it just feels like there's some underlying drama, you know, guys not getting the ball. When you talk to people around the league, is it the coordinator and not using enough motion? Is it Hurts, who's a winning quarterback but seems like a limited player? What's your take? What do you hear here with the Eagles?
Yeah, probably more, you know, the coaching situation on the offensive side of the ball, a lot of people with voices there, and a case of the head coach, you know, probably getting his way this year by kind of like he did in 2023 when they went with the in-house guy. And maybe he feels a coach some loyalty, you know, to somebody who's been there a while and he's sort of in line. But it doesn't seem like they have obviously it hasn't been looked good. So I think that's where it starts probably. I think there's been some personnel issues that are different too. I don't think their offensive line is as good, but I think they've done a less good job of setting up the offense in a way to play to Jalen Hurts' strengths and mask some of his weaknesses. They've gotten a little bit away from, I think, inside zone, some of the RPO stuff. So to me, they should be leaning into the fact he's a great deep ball thrower and that type of a thing. And it just has felt a little off. So I'm not sure 100% why, but I think that, like I said, you know, there's a lot of voices there. So you got a strong offensive line coach. You know, the head coach is involved in the offense. The, you know, the GM has opinions probably on it, you know, and does some of the hiring, influences it that way. So It just feels like there's not a super strong, unified voice there who is setting it up in the right vision.
You can go quick with these. It's just kind of a instant reaction. I'm curious what you think. Who comes out of the AFC North and wins that division? Who comes out of the AFC and goes to the Super Bowl?
AFC North. I think it will probably be Baltimore. I know they play Pittsburgh this week, so we'll see. What was the next division?
No, I'm just the AFC in general, because it's kind of backwards with these teams at the top we don't really trust, with the Patriots, the Broncos, yeah, the Colts, and then the teams down towards the bottom, the Chiefs might not make it, the Bills, like the Ravens.
So to me, I think it's pretty clear in the AFC. I think the Patriots are going to win the division. They've already beaten the Bills once, right? They are going to play again, I believe.
Yes.
They might beat them again. They may not, but I like where they're at. They got 11 wins. I mean, Buffalo's got 8. So Buffalo, to me, New England's winning that division for sure. I think Denver is winning the AFC West. They've just won so many games that you shouldn't win, or that are 50-50 games, and they're going to play the Raiders this week. I think they're going to get to 11 wins. So who is catching them in that division? I don't think it's going to be the Chargers. I mean, their quarterback just had surgery. They haven't looked right. And then the Chiefs are too far back at 6 wins. I mean, and they've lost to Denver. I just think that's pretty clear. The AFC South, that's a real tough one. I would normally say Indy, but I think Houston may be the best team. Houston's came back, so watch for Houston.
Who's the AFC representative in the Super Bowl?
That's a great question.
And don't ask me what I think, because I have no idea. You could tell me seven or eight teams, and I have no idea.
I may just say it's Buffalo for now.
Yeah.
But, man, I mean, you look at this, and you sort of come back to New England almost.
Right.
Crazy. That'd be awesome, just from a surprise standpoint.
Yeah. Couple more here. What do the Vikings do? I'm asking this from a selfish perspective as a Vikings fan. What do the Vikings do next year at quarterback? I know it's only a handful of games with McCarthy, but he's always hurt. It's been a disaster. Can they really move on this quickly after drafting him 10th or 11th overall? Or can you really throw him back out there? I don't know what they do.
Oh, they have to get a veteran. They have to get a veteran that they think they can win with. I mean, they have to find the next Darnold. Maybe they're acquiring Mac Jones, something like that. I think they need somebody who and they can easily spin it and just say, hey, we still believe in JJ, but obviously there's some issues staying on the field, and we got to be better protected this year. Last year we had to play, multiple quarterbacks, and it was tough. So I think they have to get somebody. I don't think they're going to move on and cut JJ or anything like that, but he'll be there, but he may not be anointed for the job.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because things change quickly in the NFL. You feel like that roster's good enough, but is Mac Jones, is that a ceiling raiser? You'd like, ideally, and all these teams want to do this, to hit on the rookie quarterback and to have a cheap quarterback. If you start paying Mac Jones, I think their cap situation is dicey. It feels like that's
Mac Jones is under contract for next year. Mac's under contract for next year. So maybe you'd have to do something, but I'm just making up that name, but I think they got to get a veteran.
No, it's one that's been thrown around a lot. It's not an easy situation. Again, it's quick. It's amazing how quickly things changed. This time last year, the Vikings went into the final week of the season, a 2-loss team, one game away from the 1 seed, and here they are, just a complete mess.
They should drive up the price for Indy on Daniel Jones. That'd be funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's typical Vikings, too. You had Darnold on the roster, you had Jones on the roster, and it ends up how it ends up. Chiefs, do you think they rally here and have a little run in them, or is this just not going to be their year?
Well, I don't think it's going to be their year, but I do think that they'll, win some games. I'm just looking at their schedule here. Houston, I don't know. I mean, it's at home. I see them splitting the next two. I see them maybe winning the final three. So could they get to 10 wins? Maybe.
Yeah, not a great tiebreaker situation, too, because they had the head-to-head losses with the Bills, with the Jags, with, they lost to the Chargers already, where they're not going to break a lot of ties.
I think they're 9 to 10 wins, don't feel great about them.
Dallas, how much better are they defensively? Are they a legitimate threat if they get in, or is a situation similar to Kansas City where they have to run the table and they're just too far behind?
I think we'll learn a lot against Detroit. I think if they win at Detroit, we start to feel a little bit differently about them. I think the way these conferences are set up, if you get in, I think you got a shot. Now, all the stuff about Dallas, they haven't been able to win in the playoffs, all that's real. So, I don't think they're going to go all the way or anything, but but I think it's a good year to get hot at the right time.
What's the feeling around the Seahawks? Is it? I know it wasn't a great statistical game for Darnold. Didn't do much. Didn't have to do much. Yeah. He had the disaster against the Rams. Is it similar to how Vikings fans felt last year, where you're just kind of holding your breath, waiting for the other shoe to drop? Is there a trust in Darnold?
Yeah.
How do the Seahawks look at that?
I think it's more of an. I think it's more of an optimistic feeling. He didn't have. You know, I think they still feel good about him and need to be proven otherwise. And you know, there's been a couple. They win the game the other day, 26-0. So it's not like it was a stress or anything. But I do think that there's. You know, you need to see him play well in some big games. So they're going to get, I think they get the 49ers, and I think they get the Rams still again. So, you know, we're going to get a chance to see him in those games, and I think we'll know. They play Indy as well. So they're going to play Indy, Rams, and 49ers in three of the four final games. I think that's a great preview for what do we really got with Darnold, don't you?
Absolutely.
What do we really got? Like, if they're winning in spite of him or he's blowing a couple of those games, I mean, that's real concerning.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the other team that's got an interesting schedule going forward, I was talking about the other day, the Colts, if you look at their schedule, they are no lock to make the playoffs, as crazy as that sounds, because they get the Jags twice, the Texans, the 49ers, the Seahawks. I mean, if Jones can't run and isn't healthy and this leg is an issue, I mean, not impossible. Even if they play okay, they lose, you know, three out of those five, four out of those five, and then the other season is in big trouble.
Well, here's what's interesting about that. There's Jaguars, Seahawks, and Texans on the road.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to win one of those, maybe. Maybe.
All right, last one.
49ers, Jacksonville at home, they could split that, and maybe they win both. But they could win three games.
All right, last one. I believe you tweeted about this, I don't know, over the summer, and I texted you about it. Spade L Ranch, the seasoning, I put it on all my steaks, ribs. Give our audience a little 1 minute, 2 minute, any cooking tips, anything you want to throw out there, because you and I go back and forth with this. You have great recipes, and again, anyone that hasn't tried it, it's great for any sort of meat, this Spade Ranch. So I owe you a tip of the hat with that.
So yeah, my secrets to grilling, you know, developed over many years. I have multiple grills, but I have a Weber Performer grill, and all it is a 22-inch grate, and it's got a little propane tank on it just for lighting your charcoal, so you don't have to mess with it. So you just press a button and a little flame comes out. And then I got the mesquite lump charcoal that I run off of that. And so, you know, when you're getting that started, I actually pour a little cooking oil on it, and it gets going faster and hotter, you know, it gets it going. So once we get that going, I run a cast iron grate, a little bit harder to maintain, but really like it. And that's a replacement grate. And then I love to, you know, for me, for like chicken, we love to do like a marinated chicken tenderloins. So typically with chicken, tell me if I'm going into too much of detail, to get the real flavor and the juiciness, you got to go dark meat. You got to go like thighs. You know, chicken breasts is a pretty dry thing. But the tenderloin's a nice compromise. I think it gives you the... best of both. You get a real tender, but it's also a white meat. It's like white meat if it had flavor, right? And so you get those marinated up, and you get that on the mesquite. You can't put it on too hot. They're real thin, but you grease up your grill real good, and it just takes a couple minutes on each side, you know. And those are unbelievable. And then we do the any kind of steak with the Spade L Ranch. It's Spade like a card. You know, Spade has got the Spade symbol, and it says Spade L Ranch on it. I think there's a cow or something. You just Google it, red and black. The best. And I put that stuff on the beef. You know, I dry the beef with paper towels, and then I rub that on there as if I'm trying to put too much on it, because it's something that's going to come off, but it's going to caramelize a little bit. There's a little bit of a brown sugar in it. And man, it's just a great sear on there. Making me hungry right now. In fact, we are doing steaks tomorrow. We're doing steaks tomorrow. It's our dog's birthday. He's getting a sirloin, and we're getting some fillets.
That's a pretty good life for a dog. A sirloin on his birthday. That's pretty good. What kind of dog is it?
Believe me, he runs the house here. I'm talking too much because I'm coughing.
No, it's all good. And our friend of the show, Jeff Schwartz, I have told him about this seasoning because he likes to cook. We go back and forth about this stuff. He keeps saying, it's in my cart. I got to order. I'm telling him, you don't know what you're missing with this stuff. Once you try it, you're going to put it on all your steaks.
It's really, really good.
You're the best, man. I appreciate you coming on. Happy birthday to your dog. Enjoy the stakes. Let everyone know where we can find you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. At Sando NFL on X and, of course, on The Athletic.
All right. That will do it. Thank you to Mike Sando. Rate, review, subscribe. See you Friday.